This podcast examines how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. I'm your host, Caitlin Hatch, creative polymath and dedicated consumer of Dharma talks, Dharma books, self-help books, and just generally the wisdom of others. I believe in the importance of showing gratitude, and the greatest way for me to do that is to share the tools, tips, and teachings of others that I've found immensely beneficial, which is why I started this podcast. My intention is to provide tools, ideas, and contemplations to benefit anyone who wants to listen, because life is workable and totally awesome. Shout out to Tova, who gave me the idea for this episode of Everything is Workable. The topic is bullies, or rather, how to work with bullying behavior. Disclaimer right off the bat, dualism isn't helpful. I've spoken about this before in a few past episodes, but most explicitly in Never Just One Way, which was published on the 23rd of July. Dualism is unavoidable, unless you're enlightened, but as far as humans go and human interaction, dualism is largely problematic. I won't say that it's totally problematic, because that would be dualistic. So, to begin, I'm going to set a really clear intention. I'm not dividing people up into bullies and bullied. People who bully are not bad, and taking an us versus them approach doesn't account for the fullness of the situation and all the complexities of the people involved. It would also absolve us of noticing our own poor behavior. This isn't like an angels versus devils thing. This is a human interaction thing. No one is singularly just a bully. So, on with the show. I have dealt with my fair share of bullies. We all have, I'm sure. Bullying has, until recently, been seen not so much as a rite of passage, but at the very least, it's an inevitability of childhood. Kids are cruel, right? That's the cliche. When I was in elementary, between the age of 5 and 12, for my UK listeners, I remember one bully in particular. He could probably be described as pretty typical, almost like a stereotype. He was a rough kid, he would get into fistfights with other boys, and generally he would torment girls with doing things like pulling their hair or just calling them names. He also stole a lot. If your pudding or a chocolate bar went missing, it was almost certainly him who had taken it. It was only with adult hindsight that I started to notice a few different things about him and his behavior. It was when I had just graduated from high school, and I was working with youth in the child welfare system. And I would look back, and I considered that his behavior was communicating a lot about his home life. Violence was not weird to him. It made sense for him to communicate through physical and verbal violence, to express anger outwardly. He'd normalized it. I remember him coming to school with a black eye once. He also never stole stuff. He always stole food. And on reflection, I can't ever remember seeing him bring a lunch from home, and he never got the paid hot lunch from the cafeteria. This kid wasn't some petty thief, he was hungry. When I entered junior high, so 13 to 15 for my UK listeners, bullying took on a different quality. It was insidious. It was manipulative, cruel. There wasn't usually any physical contact. Sometimes there had been, but mostly it was verbal. And it was entirely carried out by other girls. This kind of bullying was alien to me. I had no problem telling teachers about the bullying that I experienced at first. I would find a teacher to confide in, and I'd voice the struggle that I was having to be liked, to be accepted, all that. I didn't understand how the social structure worked, or why I just really didn't fit into it. It was like my hair was wrong, my clothes were wrong, the music I liked was wrong. Effectively, I was being told by my peers that I wasn't okay as I was. I needed to change. I was a nerd, a geek, a loser, a freak. What was I supposed to do? How was I supposed to deal? I wanted guidance and support, and I approached various adults with all my teenage angst, asking for that guidance and that support. And the advice that I got was this. Walk away. Ignore them. They only do it out of jealousy. This was the first time that I experienced victim blaming, although I wouldn't have called it that at the time. I didn't understand that concept when I was 13. The advice, walk away, ignore them, they're just jealous, was all saying, it's your responsibility to not be bullied. Besides that, it didn't work anyway. Like, bullies will follow their victims around. And besides, I mean, how are you supposed to walk away if it's happening in the desk next to you while you're in class? It's not like you can leave the classroom. So then, you know, that's when ignoring them comes in. But ignoring them's no better. That whole sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. We all know that that is a giant lie. It does hurt. It really hurts. Sometimes words hurt a lot more than physical violence, actually. And suppression, like trying to convince ourselves that it doesn't hurt, is really unhealthy and unhelpful. As for reasoning it to make someone feel better with phrases like, they only do it out of jealousy, this doesn't exactly provide consolation. Plus, it's inaccurate. I've talked to people who bullied their peers, and they've told me that they did it because it was fun, or it was just to make them look cool to someone else, or they were just bored. It was kind of done for sport and entertainment. They weren't really thinking about the target of their bullying at all, which is interesting to consider and something I'm going to come back to later in a moment. So the advice that I was being given was entirely unhelpful. The teachers I spoke to were telling me, we're not going to talk to the people doing it or challenge or punish their behavior. You need to take responsibility by not being bullied. This leads to long-term problems, such as learned helplessness. This is something which occurs when people feel helpless to avoid any negative situation because previous experience has shown them that they don't have any control. Now, this is where things are going to get a little bit muddy because actually the essence of the message I was being given was right. We don't have control over other people's behavior. The only thing we can control is our own state of mind and our behavior. In short, you can't change other people. You can only change yourself. We can't change other people. We can't make others alter their behavior. We can invite them to think differently, and we can present them with alternative ways of doing things, but it will ultimately always be up to them to make those changes. I know this from my own experience. I mean, being told how to behave has never once resulted in me acting that way. I've only ever changed my behavior because I wanted to, not because it was expected of me. So no, I couldn't change the bullies and make them stop. But being told to walk away, ignore them, or somehow pity them for their cruel behavior wasn't the right message either. I've always been really open about the bullying that I experienced as a teenager, and as a result, people often ask me, well, what did you do? What advice do you have? Well, first of all, it took me a while. First, it almost broke me. I crumbled underneath it for a really long time. I began self-harming, and I even attempted suicide at one point. And then, when I was 14, I accepted that no one was going to save me, and that I had to come up with something, anything, different than ignoring them or pretending that the words didn't matter or that they didn't hurt. So I confronted them, which was terrifying. I remember the first time I did it. A girl called me a loser bitch one day, and I turned to her and asked, why? What have I ever done to you? I don't even know your name. Why am I a bitch or a loser? She hadn't expected that, but then neither had I, actually. I remember that I felt really sick, but I was also just tired. I was tired of being a victim, and I was tired of flinching and hiding and constantly trying to fit in and not knowing what I was doing wrong that was making me a social outcast. And it worked. It stopped her in her tracks. She blinked a few times, she kind of sneered, whatever. And then she walked away, and she never bullied me again. I felt victorious. But the funny bit is, I didn't understand what I'd done until very recently, like in the last 2 and a bit years. So what had I done? I'd established boundaries. By asking her why she was calling me a name, I was calling her out on her poor behavior. I was telling her, it's not okay for you to speak to me that way. And in fact, just saying that, it's not okay for you to speak to me that way. That would have been fine too. Bullying behavior is not okay. But I didn't realize that what was okay was to say as much. And it wasn't until recently that I really got this, because of how much I'd internalized this victim blaming, how much I felt that helplessness of it being my fault that I wasn't liked. Remember what I said earlier about people telling me that they bullied for sport and they didn't really think about the person that they were targeting? Well, also in that situation, potentially, I was making myself more human for this girl. I wasn't some anonymous face. I was now an actual person who might speak to her. There's another story I want to tell, a very quick one, that's from my psychologist. She has two young girls, and she's talked to them a lot about boundaries and bullies. Of course, she's a psychologist. She's made sure that her kids are on this. And one day, one of her daughters was verbally attacked by another girl at her school. I understand, her daughter was like 8 or 9 when this happened. Her response to this girl was just to say, "Wow, you're really mean. That's really mean." And then walk away. And the interesting thing was that this girl, who had been bullying quite a few people, actually started to behave differently. She started being nicer to people and kinder. She stopped calling people names. Because the thing is, bullies don't necessarily know they're bullies. That's why I had the disclaimer at the beginning. It hasn't necessarily been pointed out to them that their behavior isn't okay. Because generally, bullying behavior is done out of protection. So, victory, right? We've got a solution. Well, that's the thing, right? That's how we can confront bullies. But the thing about bullying is, it doesn't end in school. As an adult, I've encountered bullying behavior in my peers. With supposed friends, it's not necessarily so difficult. You don't always have to point it out. Sometimes you can just see that a relationship is toxic, and you can just let it die quietly in the corner. But what do you do when you work with someone who bullies? What do you do if that person happens to be your manager? What do you do then? Do the same rules apply? Can we just tell a manager that what they're doing is not okay? In professional situations, it becomes a lot more complicated. Bullying in the workplace is recognized as a problem to be nipped in the bud by most employers, and yet it runs rampant. I'm not sure why this is, but from personal experience, it seems like there's an expectation that adults don't behave in the same way as children, and therefore proving bullying becomes a sticky situation. Bullying in the workplace is really hard to name and point out. It's usually nothing so obvious as name-calling, and it certainly doesn't usually manifest as actual physical violence like hair-pulling or pinching, and if it did, I mean, that's just assault, so it's a lot easier to name. So, what does bullying behavior look like when it happens in the workplace? Bullying behavior is anything that belittles, demeans, or is manipulative. It's harsh criticism or feedback that doesn't allow for improvement. I'm going to tell a little story to explain what bullying looks like in the workplace. It's a personal one. I once had a manager who attempted to bully me. There was a miscommunication about my shifts. I was working 3 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and I sometimes switch shifts in order to attend staff meetings, which happen on Wednesdays. There'd often be schedule changes because of other things, and this was all communicated through Outlook. We had shared Outlook calendars, so you could always check who was supposed to be in when by looking at the calendar. One week, my manager thought that I had purposefully not shown up on a Wednesday, and they told me as such. They did so in an aggressive manner, which was a bit of an ambush, and they also stated that I was in my probationary period, so I had better watch it. I knew that I'd not done anything to warrant what they were saying, especially a threat on my job. What they were saying and how they said it and the whole context was bullying behavior. I felt cornered, and I felt like my job was being threatened. Inwardly, all of my teenage angst and panic and fear and wanting people to like me was running rampant. But outwardly, as soon as my manager had finished saying their bit, I firmly and clearly stated the facts. I provided clear evidence that I had worked exactly the days that had been agreed upon, that the entire thing was a miscommunication, which could have been cleared up with a phone call on the day that they thought I was supposed to be in, and that it felt very much as if they were attempting to catch me out, which I didn't appreciate, and to point out that that's how it felt and that this is what it really looked like, I said, if you thought that I was meant to be in on a Wednesday, why didn't you call me on Wednesday? This meeting happened to take place 10 minutes before the end of my shift on a Friday. It really just said to me, you're trying to manipulate me, you're trying to catch me out, and you've also threatened my job. And this isn't okay. This is bullying behavior. I didn't say that, but I was firm, clear, and concise in my response. It wasn't until a few years later that I learned about transactional analysis, which is also known as the three primary ego states. The ego states are parent, child, and adult. I don't think these states need much of an explanation, but effectively, parents lecture, belittle, talk down to others. Children throw tantrums, they act defiant, they pout. Adults communicate clearly, respect boundaries, take responsibility for their own emotional state, and don't take ownership for the emotional state of other people. It's called transactional analysis because it's usually used to teach good customer service skills, but it's applicable in many situations, including this one. My manager at the time was taking the parent approach, but rather than revert to a child, which is usually what I probably would have tended to do, I responded as an adult. By doing so, I was communicating that it wasn't okay. I said the entire experience felt like an ambush. They did kind of rescind on what they'd said and said, you know, it's all water under the bridge, and let's just say it was a misunderstanding, we'll start fresh Monday. But I'd already been having some issues with this manager, so to further establish boundaries, I stated clearly I wasn't comfortable with that, and I wanted a third party, and I wanted mediation for the situation. Later, when the mediation was held, this individual reverted to their child ego. They crossed their arms and they said, I've been a manager for 8 years and no one has ever complained. Remember what I said about people who bully not realizing that what they're doing is bullying? A manager who has no idea what acceptable boundaries are will continue to cross and violate them because no one stands up to them and tells them that that kind of behavior is abusive and unacceptable. They'll never learn because no one said as much. I mean, they might not learn anyway. Remember what I said, it's up to people to change themselves, but they have absolutely no hope if no one ever stands up to them. No, we can't change the behavior of other people, but we can communicate clearly and firmly where our boundaries are. And it's not easy to do. I'm still learning and I'm not really good at it. But I know when I find myself needing to declare a boundary that's been violated to establish and name it, like, it can really fill me up with panic, but I know that I feel some sense of control over the situation because I'm approaching it as an adult. The added challenge, of course, is that we're told often as both children and adults that it's our responsibility to stop people from being bullies. Really, that what we should be being told and what we should be teaching our kids is how to point out bullying behavior, name it, and communicate that it's unacceptable. I have yet to meet anyone who likes being told that they're mean, or that their behavior is cruel or unkind. I know that I take a good, long, hard look at myself if I've been told that something I did or said caused harm to someone else. This is why I started this episode with the disclaimer about dualism, and why I've been careful to try my best not to call anyone directly a bully. We can all exhibit bullying behavior. It's a very human thing done to protect our ego. It's not okay, but we're all capable of it, and have all at some point carried it out in various ways. I never had specific things pointed out to me, but I know from my experience of being bullied that I recognize the belittling, mean, and cruel things that I might have said or done as a kid to protect myself or to try and fit in. I also had parents who wouldn't stand for bullying behavior. They made me understand what I had done wrong and then take ownership by apologizing, which I talked about in last week's episode. But not everyone gets that when they're growing up. So we have kids who bully, who grow up to be adults who bully, because no one has ever told them, no, that's not okay. You're not allowed to call me names, to belittle me, to put me down. You can if you want, but I'm drawing a line right here and telling you it's not acceptable. So today, I'm inviting you to stand up to the bullying behavior of others. It's scary, yes, totally. but it's liberating. Because while it won't necessarily stop the bullying, it will most definitely mean you stop being bullied. They can try, but you aren't having any of it. You're saying, actually, I do have a choice. The choice I'm making is to tell you that it's not okay to treat people this way. In doing so, what you're really doing is teaching yourself that you don't deserve to be bullied, that you're not inviting it. And firmly, without aggression, you are giving yourself permission to say no. Thank you so much for listening to Everything is Workable. My content will always be free, but if you'd like to help make it even better, you can become a patron by clicking the green button at the top of the page. I'm always looking for content suggestions and people to interview. If you've got any ideas or would like to contribute, you can get in touch through my website, www.faunawolfcreations.com. That's faunawolfcreations.com. Thank you to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world. The music used in this podcast is from his Creative Commons Volume 5 album, available on www.dexterbritton.co.uk.